can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. We're qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 912, November 15th, 2021, Nasser.
Obrigado, Senor Rogers. I say goal for Bottas, Hail Mary for Hamilton, as Mercedes returned the favor with stunning Samba success in Sao Paulo. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, LCA shows us the true pace of a fresh Merc. Everybody in the paddock is talking about the Merc's newfound speed. Toto hands Max, MC Hammer CD, can't touch this. Just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program up on the servers or the cloud. So please, click on the F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know, you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Oh, Mr. Rogers, I've been waiting to have a chat with you since the Brazilian Grand Prix, and I'm so elated to tell you that you were right all along the watchtower, and now I am 1,000% convinced Lewis is lucky. But wait, there's more. Lucky to have so much talent. Last I checked, Toto has been entering two cars since LCH joined the team, and like you said, there is a lot of talk and chatter on the web. Where is the speed coming from? And I just hope they don't end up in the same situation as Ferrari after Charles Leclerc had back-to-back wins. And I know some people out there would like to see that happen because, you know, not everybody's going to love everybody all the time. What say you, sir, on the performance?
Fantastic! And you knew this was coming. There was no way that there wasn't going to be a action for every reaction or vice versa. So we were waiting for the reaction after all the action in the Max boot camp. And boy, did it come. And they were giggling. They were pumped up. And my favorite part is Christian Horner. He's scratching his head. He's going, wow, I don't know where this newfound speed is. But we're going to have to figure it out. Where it's coming from. My goodness. No, the whole thing is fantastic. But you give Lewis Hamilton a fresh, where, you know, you still have some peanuts and packaging material in the cockpit. You give him a fresh Mercedes, and everybody is in a heap of trouble. And it was just great to watch.
Well, as Max said, that Lewis has a new engine, so he will have performance, and hopefully it will die down soon. Well, soon is only a few weeks remaining now, but this has really, had Max finished ahead of Lewis in this race, I think he would have at least one hand on the championship trophy. But this stunner in Sao Paulo, Lewis is saying, not yet, amigo. So we don't know what's going to happen, but this is, the championship is on fire now, and this is just fantastic. And there is a lot of war of words going on between Toto and, you know, wouldn't it be funny? Do you remember this, I think his coach's name was Buddy Ryan, He once punched his assistant coach on live NFL Sunday night or Monday night. Do you remember that?
Of course. Buddy Ryan. I'm a big fan of Buddy Ryan because really he was a great coach and his brother's a great coach. Comes from a fine family of outstanding American NFL coaches.
Yeah, so I won't be surprised I won't be surprised after Abu Dhabi, Max and Lewis are hugging each other and, you know, respecting each other. And in the background, Toto and Christian Horner are going Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. Wouldn't that be funny?
Down goes Horner. It would be hilarious. It would be hilarious. But the funny part is everybody cannot forget that the Mercedes is still the best car on the field. It never stopped being the best car on the field. It's just that everybody started not paying attention. But now, I like it, though, because Toto is so smart. Three more races to go. Let's just throw this thing up on 10, maybe 10.5, and laugh all the way to the trophy cabinet case.
You know, what I find so interesting, the season, especially the remaining races now, they are not going as per script. There was all this talk of Lewis does very well in Kota, which he did very well, but, you know, Max pulled a fast one on him. And then there was all this talk, the high level of Sao Paulo is going to help Max. I guess it did, and he did put in a big fight. But we all know who won the race from 10th on the grid. It's been getting a lot of press. Even the drivers who finished behind him, obviously, they are impressed. And who wouldn't be? But anyway, well, what we have here, sir, if you look at the big picture, is a failure to deliver from the pole sitter. Men who started 10th gave it all to the Max, no pun intended. In simple racing language, this was just like the Red Baron's final race in a red car at the same track in 2006 after getting a cut tire from Fisico. And that only, if you're a racing fan, not biased toward one driver or one team or anything, just a racing fan, then you only need two words to describe the performance we saw on Sunday in Sao Paulo and what we saw in the same place in 2006. Simply incredible. The dogfight we had on Sunday is the essence of Formula One motor racing. I mean, it had shades of Dijon Prenois with both these guys going off track and both continuing to go after each other. Did you enjoy that? Did it give you a taste of honey Dijon mustard?
Well, I mean, it was a little too smoothed out and processed and homogenized to be even close to Dijon. Dijon was rich, dirty, filthy, disgusting, and loving it. But no, I mean, everybody was really down on Max for not pushing LCH on lap whatever that was, 48, into the left turn. And Brundle, man, he couldn't stop it. I mean, he couldn't stop it. Even after the FIA said no further investigation, Brundle goes, oh, well, that means that Max can do it whenever he wants. I'm just going, I mean, can't you actually hide your bias just a little bit? It was completely out of control. And I think the headlines are going to continue. Steering angle not looked at by the FIA. How dare they not look at the onboard camera from Verstappen's car? I think some of that was out of control. But that's just me. But I thought it was great racing. Fun, fun, fun.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, we've had too many penalties. And races should be decided on the tracks, as this one was. So I'm glad they did not give a penalty or anything like that. But, you know, rules are rules. They have to be enforced equally for everybody. But these penalties have always been out of control, unless there is a, you know, unless somebody is pasteurized. And Lewis was not pasteurized. He was just given a taste of medicine that Max has been prescribing since he stepped into Toro Rosso some years ago. And that's what we want. And I think these drivers are also very happy. And it's very sad, you know, that one of them is going to be a loser at the end of the day. But that's the way it goes. But the thing is, you know, Max still has a decent lead in the championship, 14 points. And that's a lot of points, especially when, you know, both cars, I mean, normal course of business, both these guys are going to win the race or finish second. But with final three races coming up at Middle East, sands of time in championship may be shifting. Lewis, I think, will need to have a magic carpet ride and win all three races and pull, so he can pull one over on Schumi. Lewis has to win at least two races, okay, and then still finish ahead of Max in the final race. I think that's how the, assuming that both of them are running at the end of the race. So, you still sticking with your prediction? It's Hamilton's championship?
All the way, Hamilton, Hamilton, Hamilton. We love Hamilton.
Well, I have a feeling if the championship goes to the final race and it comes down to, you know, a close championship point situation, and it comes down to whoever finish ahead in season finale will be world champion, I mean, that will seriously increase the possibility of Suzuka in the sand. And we definitely do not want that. We do not want a DNF, a visit to the DNF chapel. We do not want some silly penalty or engine kablamo. We want these two very great drivers to fight till the final corner of the final lap of the final race. And, you know, may the lucky man win, whoever that is.
Absolutely. Keep up the good work, Nas.
Yes, and LCH, your new favorite driver, said after the race, but there was something interesting. It's not all rosy for Lewis Hamilton, let me tell you that. After the race, he said that this race performance, because they asked him, is this your greatest race? And he said he had a race in Formula weekend in Bahrain Formula 3. I think it was known as the, I remember that race, Bahrain Super Prix, and where he had to start 20th in race 1, which they would call pre-final in those days. He finished 10th, and in the final race, he won the race. So that was very impressive. You know, he was talking about, I don't know if you catch this, that gave him, he had extra motivation to put on that performance in Bahrain because McLaren had torn up his contract. Did you watch that?
No, I did not hear that wonderful.
It was in the post-race thing, and I heard him say that also. It is true, once upon a time, when he was with McLaren before reaching Formula One, his contract was cancelled. But I cannot name these two people. These are very, very senior people in British motorsports who told me a long time ago that Lewis Hamilton's dad, Anthony Hamilton, had requested McLaren to take him into GP2 in 2005 because McLaren took him in 2006, and Anthony Hamilton said, we don't want to do Formula 3 again, and because we have an offer from our team to go GP2 in 2005. Ron Dennis says, no, we're going to stick to the program. And it was, from what I've heard, and I've heard this more than once, that it was Anthony Hamilton who requested to release Lewis so he can go GP2 in 2005. And what is so interesting, I mean, they go there and the team said, oopsie, the sponsorship fell apart. Can you come up with the 2 million or million or whatever it was required? And then they had to go back to Ronster. And you know what is so interesting, Mr. Rogers, because boys will be boys and history repeat itself. You know, this South African kid, Adrian Zog, who I think is a very talented driver, he told me himself when we did an interview with him some years ago, he used to be in the Red Bull program, and I asked him, how disappointing was it when they dropped you? And he said, well, they never dropped me. They were going to have me race in Japan. And my manager said, who, by the way, at that time was Peter Collins, who at one time used to own Lotus Formula One team, and Mika Hakkinen was there. Oh, he was able to arrange a GP2 ride with the team, so we don't have to go to Japan. So say goodbye to Red Bull, which he did. And just like Lewis Hamilton's situation, the team said, oopsie, the sponsorship fell through. Can you come up with $1 million, please? So it's interesting. There are always two sides of the story. I'm not saying what I have is utmost truth, but this is what I've heard from a couple of people who would know this. So, and these things happen, and we've seen similar situations. I'm not taking any names now, at McLaren in their winning ways and days. Do you remember those days?
I personally, sir, I do not recall.
Okay, Mr. Reagan, we will move on. Okay, sir, the real surprise for me on Saturday morning, even though it was reported it may happen, but it really surprised me coming so late in the season, was the LCH disqualification on technical ground, that being the width of his DRS wing opening. And FIA gave a €50,000 fine to Max to make him holler for touching LCH's car. I mean, this thing, these people should know. You know, you cannot touch a car in Parc Fermé because, you know, I think what happens if a car is touched by a member of the team, that pretty much will get you disqualified. So these things, these kids need to be careful about these things. Shall we talk a little bit about sprint race, sir?
One of my favorites.
Did you enjoy this sprint race?
Did not see the sprint race. The sprint race was not televised. But I did have plenty of college football, and the qualifying for the World Cup was on USA against Mexico. So, yes, Formula One was way down at the bottom of the list in my neighborhood.
Somebody needs to call Netflix.
Yes. Unfortunately, they don't take my calls because you have to have a minimum level in your account, and the F1 Weekly level is way below anything Netflix is interested in.
Exactly. Well, the sprint race was a case of Bottas 4.0 winning sprint race number 3. A very impressive performance on soft tires against pole sitter Max on medium tires. And of course, your man, LCH, put in a performance like LCH and came from last to fifth in the 24-lap race. For me, this was no surprise, as excellence is expected and most of the time delivered by those who are at the top of their game, and he has been there for quite a while. Max lost the lead to Bottas at the start and never regained the top spot. I think since the difference between first and second was only 1 point, maybe Max did not go to the max in terms of aggression. But a point lost here and point lost in fastest lap for Bottas in Mexico may make the difference in the championship, or so they are hoping in the Wolf Pack. So after sprint race, Max added 2 more points in his lead, and the show moved on to Sunday with Bottas on pole, Max second, and LCH 10th, courtesy of 5-place grid penalty for internal combustion engine change. They are smart, they are not changing anything and everything, otherwise he'll go to the back of the grid. But sir, as I've said many times before, both Lewis and Max have a package. If they start at the very bottom of the grid, I'm fully convinced that both will make it to the podium. Because, you know, their respective teammates will say, after you, sir, or after you, number one. So I have no problem. I really expected Lewis to be on the podium. Honestly, did you expect that he will go and win the race?
Yes, I did. And it was pretty obvious around mid-race when things were starting to fall apart for Red Bull. And you knew he had the pace. He wanted to throw down the gauntlet. He wanted to get the gloves out and go, chee, 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 I challenge you, sir. So, oh yes, it was glorious. That was the best part. All the infighting between the principals, and it was perfect. It was great. And Hamilton did what he needed to do to stay into this beautiful world. And let's not forget, he's not handicapped by any chance. He's still got a wonderful car. He's got Toto. So I'm telling you, Hamilton's got this in the bag. But he's, I think, stringing it out a little bit, adding a little drama. You know, F1 needs this, and Liberty loves this. So don't mess it up. Keep up the good work, LCH.
Well, you know, when Max got the jump on Bottas to grab the lead at the start in the main race, I figured that Max, being Max, will win this race and Lewis will find a way to the podium spot. And once he's in the top three, you know he's going to finish second. And Sergio wasted no time in making a Red Bull 1-2, and I was really convinced that second or third is the best LCH will be able to do. And this was looking very good for Max and his non-life-changing championship. But LCH had other ideas. The first inkling I had that this might work out for Lewis when the safety car came out, that's when I said, okay, now it could be danger zone for Max. But, you know, Max is not going to give up easy a race lead. And at the same time, Lewis is not going to roll over and play dead so he can win his first championship. So we are loving this. Now, the pole position starting Silver Arrows, after doing a tremendous job on Saturday, on Sunday was going Paul Simon style, slip sliding away, and was fourth after five laps. That's pretty sad. And I think in the remaining races, anytime Lewis is right behind Bottas, whatever the positions are, that will automatically trigger Valtteri. This is James' message. But Valtteri is looking very happy and at peace with himself these days. He's looking much nicer, I mean, much at relaxed now, and performing better than he was in the first part of the season. And of course, in the Why Am I Not Surprised column, we have Yuki in the early stages, being his usual Yahoo and running into Lance Stroll. Really not required. Lap 18 was the beginning of the end and the turning point in the slaying of the Red Bull dominating Dragon. Lewis passed Checo to move into second, only for Checo to use DRS and repass Hamilton, which was really fantastic Mexican machismoism. But the deal and fate was sealed the following lap when Lewis said adios amigo to Checo, and up ahead less than 4 seconds was the rear wing of Max's Red Bull. And like you said, the new rule is, can't touch this. Now, LCH coming into pit stop lap 27, did that surprise you?
No, I knew they were going to pounce on that. They want to be dominant. They want to think ahead of Christian Horner, and Toto is starting to figure it all out. So, yep, it was boom, boom, boom. And once LCH got past Checo, it was easy. You could tell he was catching Verstappen. Tires were going to be sort of significant, and the lack of mediums may be a little hurtful to LCH, but it didn't bother him that much. But no. And to be honest with you, it began at such a early part of the race. I think Verstappen knew that his days were numbered in this race, and finishing second is actually a huge, huge deal, I think, for these guys. They could have taken one of each other out in the race, trying to pass each other. I think, to be honest with you, Red Bull finished this pretty much the way they wanted to. The only problem is the speed of the Merc, and it's not going to be good in the hot desert sun.
Yeah, LCHN, pit stop number one, lap 27. Following lap, Max was in. And at this time, I mean, he had a pretty decent lead before the pit stops. But when both came out, the lead was less than 2 seconds. And I think dishes were done. A lap 31, Max radios his team saying, we can't get undercut again. And by now, LCH was almost in DRS range. And Hard Rock Party was about to start. Lap 41, Max was in before Lewis. Now, this was a real surprise for me. I expected him to come before, but I thought this was real too soon. Lap 44, car number 44 in, and the gap then was 2.6, with Max first up and still leading the race. Now, I don't know if this was hilarious or sad, but it was amusing when Bottas told the team, we have just thrown away an easy 1-2.
It was pretty funny stuff. That's why he's number two, Nasser. He's not really good with strategy and calculus.
Yeah, this would be like Checo radioing after the start of the race. Oh, Max tricked me and took the lead. You know, that's. But we need some humor with such intensity that is happening these days. Lap 47, less than half a second, and harum scarum on the horizon. Lap 48, both off the track as Max was doing the Harlem Shuffle on the straight. Move it to the right, move it to the left. Now, there was quite a bit of weaving, Mr. Rogers. What do you make of that?
First of all, I love the weaving. I love the crying for the weaving. But really, the best part was when the team, a few laps later, told Max that there was a black and white flag for the weaving, and you got to be cool. And Max says, oh, yeah, tell him I said hi. I mean, I was rolling, I'm telling you. Max is a fine young man, and I'm digging it, man. That was just hilarious. He's becoming cynical and bitter, and that's what I love.
He is a very cool cat. You know, the only person who was like very cool under any and all kind of pressure that impressed me was Jacques Villeneuve. And I'll never forget how cool he was in the remaining few races of 1997, right?
1997.
Yeah, Max is very, that was funny too, that I'll say hi or whoever he wanted to say hi. So that's very good. And then what we had, sir, here is, now when these people went off the track and the, you know, when the aerial camera show, I was very surprised how far off both of them went, and amazing both of them kept going. And you're right, there were cries out, going out for penalty, and the remaining laps from then on, they were just industrial strength, hammer time. And lap 59, the deed was done. The crowd was so supportive of Lewis, like the race was being run at Silverstone. Did you notice, I'm sure you must have, the support he has in Brazil?
Yes, I was actually, he's been there for a long time, and he did a lot of loving things for the Senna Foundation. Listen, I'm cool with it, man. I'm open, dude. I love Senna. And, I mean, the yellow helmet, and Hamilton wore the yellow helmet. I mean, obviously, there is a connection, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, that was very impressive, and the support was like he was like a local driver. I mean, that was very, very impressive. And, of course, like you said, you know, he has some sort of connection with the Senna Foundation, and he is man of the people, you know, even though he lives in Monaco. He belongs to the peeps. I live in the principality. I pay no taxes, but I'm with the peeps of Stephen Age. But, you know, to each his own. He's not the first one and definitely not the last one to do that. And so, lap 61, the two French drivers tried to take each other out because there is no love lost between these two, but Gasly prevailed over Ocon. I have to say, Gasly is doing a very, very impressive job, and he's getting a lot of kudos in the press. But let me ask you a question. Do you think he's doing good enough, and should he go back to mothership of Red Bull?
They're not going to take him because they don't need to. They're just simply too busy right now. But I'm telling you, I see Gasly replacing Fernando in the future at Alpine if he can just hang in there for a little while.
Yeah, whatever he does, that's his business, but he should not go to Red Bull because Max is going to chop him. He's going to be refried beans or refried escargot if he goes back to Red Bull mothership. Now, the other hilarious, funny stuff for me during the race was 10 laps to go, like this is going to happen, Toto telling the wingman to go get him. Yeah, certain circumstances it can happen, but do you really think Max is going to give up two places to two Mercedes drivers?
No, but I mean, on the other hand, Bottas is laughing. He's going, listen, guys, you guys fired my ass. I got the cruise control on right now. I'm listening to Sergio Mendez. Leave me alone.
Yeah, he's on the Helsinki program. Cruise all the way to Scandinavia and enjoy life. But we'll see how it goes. But sir, you know, talking of speed, within a few laps, LCH was 3 seconds ahead of Max. And that was really the saga from Sao Paulo. Many are calling it his greatest win. We don't know about that. I think his victory at Indianapolis in 2007, which was done before he was in Formula One for even 1 year, and against the guy who had dethroned the Red Baron previous two seasons. That race, if you ever watch on YouTube, Mr. Rogers, the intensity is at the peak. And I'm very happy to say, I don't know if you were there, but I was there, and I'm very happy that I was there. Were you at Indy 2007?
Yes, sir. I was at all the races.
Oh, that's good. I did go to all the races at Indy also, and I did miss the first one at Kota, and I ain't gonna miss the Miami Beach Rumba. That's coming. And so we'll see how that wins. Are you gonna come to the Miami Grand Prix, sir?
No, unfortunately, I failed the physical test to buy tickets for Miami. And I don't know, I hope you've been practicing, but you have to do a tango with a certain amount of hip flexing, and then you have to do the mambo, and then you have to do that thing under the stick. And if you pass all those, then they'll sell you tickets. You know, they only want active, flexible people at the Miami Grand Prix.
You sure about this now?
I may have been conned, but it's happened before.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Okay, sir, now this this is especially for you. This was victory 101 for Lewis Carl Hamilton. He is still traveling northbound. Now, this has really got my attention. His number of Grand Prix wins now is equal to the number of wins by all Brazilian drivers. We're talking names like Senna, Fittipaldi, Piquet, even Rubinho, the two-legged Rubinho, won a lot of races, and so did Massa. So this is an incredible achievement, and if he can top this off with his championship number 8, that is just going to be, as my friend used to say, to borrow a phrase from my friend, lips are moving, but nothing is coming out. Not surprisingly, this shouldn't surprise anyone, Her Majesty's Kingdom is the leader in the F1 field with number of Grand Prix wins. British drivers have 305. Think about it. They have all the British drivers, Clark, Stewart, Graham Hill, Mike Hawthorn, John Surtees. The total combined is 305, and Lewis has 101 of those wins. And of course, we have a lot of races this year, and cars are very reliable. I understand that. And now that is a number compared to second place. The nation is Deutschland über alles, or Germany in plain simple language. This is also very impressive. They have German drivers have 179 wins. 91 of those are courtesy of Michael Schumacher. Okay, now this you know, when you talk about lucky, this is what I have to tell you. Sergio Perez was fourth, and he said on the post race show that he could not do anything about 44 as the driver of that car was on a different planet. That's his words. So, you know, Lewis Hamilton has a lot of respect from people who are racing with him. Charles Leclerc was fifth ahead of his Ferrari teammate Sainz Jr. And Gasly was seventh. Of course, Mr. Yuki Tsunoda, his teammate, was 15th. Good news for you, sir, if you still care for this team. Both Alpines were in the points. Esteban 8th and Machismo 9th. Lando Norris was 10th. McLaren has scored only 2 points from the Brazilian and Mexican Grand Prix. So that's not very good in their championship fight standings with Ferrari. So that's the way it's go. And Mr. Kimi Raikkonen was 12th after starting from pit lane. His teammate Antonio Giovinazzi was 14th. And by the time this podcast is on the digital airwaves, Giovinazzi most likely would be chopped by Sauber for the first Chinese driver to race in Formula One, Guan Yu Zhu. And there was some reports on some media that, I don't know if it was mainland China or Hong Kong, that they already had posters of Guan Yu Zhu as the first Chinese Formula One driver. So they may have jumped the gun there. But if it's true, so be it. Let's take a look at some of the comments from the podium drivers. Winner, Mr. Lewis Hamilton, he said, and I quote, "What a race. The team here and at the factory did an amazing job. And Valtteri did a great job today to get as many points as possible. I was pushing as hard as I could from last on grid yesterday and then with another 5 place penalty today. This was, I think, the hardest weekend I've had." End of quote. Second place Max, apart from his fun during the driving, He said, and I quote, top speed-wise, it was tough to defend. You can clearly see when they take a fresh engine that it gives them a bit more power, so hopefully that will die down over the coming races. End quote. Third man, the eternal Mr. Bottas, said, and I quote, the start today was quite tricky. It was a disappointing first lap, but I tried my best. After that, the pace was good, and from the cockpit, I thought we could have a chance of the one stop, but we decided to do a two stop. End quote. Anything from you on final analysis for the motor racer on Sunday? And by the way, this, as we know, it was the Sao Paulo Grand Prix, not the Brazilian Grand Prix. It's pathetic, you know how politics plays in sports. It's very, very sad.
Well, on that note, I called it the Brazilian Grand Prix. It's in Brazil, so I'll probably continue to do that because I don't want to get sidetracked whatsoever. Great race. Max is going to start thinking about possibly not having number one on his car because I know he was sort of pretty pumped up about that. But you know what, Max? Your life is really not going to change. You're a millionaire. Get on your cool bicycles and have a good time. But I'm very thirsty. Nasser is completely famished. So we're going to walk over to the corner bar and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Guan Yizhu from China, and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Sun Road with Chinese driver Guan Yizhu. Guan, good to meet you. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm feeling great, and of course, really happy with what we achieved today.
Good. At the season opener in Po, which I watched live on the web, you became the first Chinese driver to win a race in European Formula 3. Tell us about the victory and what it means for your career.
Yeah, I mean, coming to this season as an experienced driver, my goal, of course, is to win the championship, and first you have to win in races. And to win pole such a historic, difficult straight circuit, of course, is a good credit to the team and myself that we've been doing a good job in pole, good qualify, made us front row for the race, and got a good start. Just after that, just try to keep the gap and maintain the good laps lap by lap because it's super easy to, of course, to make a mistake in pole with such a tight straight circuit, and to become the first Chinese driver, I'm super delighted, and hopefully I'm making my country proud.
Okay, good. Now, like you say, this is your third year in Formula 3. What was the biggest challenge when you moved up to Formula 3?
Of course, Formula 4, it was my first year. I did 1 year single-seating in Formula 4, and then the move into Formula 3 with the downforce is mainly the hardest part because, of course, with so much downforce in the high-speed corner, you really have to be trusting the car, trusting yourself. So that's the main issues.
Now, like Marcus, you're also in the Ferrari Driver Academy, which is very impressive. Tell us how this deal came about. Did you call them or they call you?
In 2013, I won the karting Rotax Max, the Junior Max, European and British champion, finished third in the grand final in New Orleans. So after this, they called me, contacted me to making a test in Fiorano, and I went there in beginning of 2014. Everything went well, did some physical training simulator, and and after we signed, really happy to be the first agent to join the academy.
Yeah, very impressive. Are you based in Italy during the racing season?
Yeah, during the race season, I'm based there because, of course, Team Prema is in Italy, so it's not far from the both factories, so live there is definitely the easier life you can do and concentrate more for the race weekend.
And what part of China are you from?
Shanghai.
Okay, we have a Grand Prix in Shanghai. It's been there for many years. How popular is motorsports in China?
Of course, these couple of years, I have to say, it's been growing up much more than previous years because the first Grand Prix in Shanghai was 2004. It was 2004.
Something around that.
Yeah, I don't remember, but yeah, I was there for the first Grand Prix. And by then, I was only a small kid, wasn't a racing driver or anything. And of course, the Chinese sports is growing up, the motorsports in China, year by year. There's much more people knows Formula One, knows racing. Yeah, it's getting better, and I'm happy to hear the news for my country, for my city.
Yeah.
Okay. And as far as the karting scene is concerned, you know, China is a big country. Is there a well-organized national karting championship, or every region has its own thing?
I mean, we have a China national karting. That's when I started my first karting period. I was in China, in Shanghai, and I was doing the China championship, travel around China, and it was quite popular in the beginning, and it got a bit more quiet during the last 2-3 years, and these couple of years is growing up a bit more now.
Okay. And how long did you race go-karts in China?
I started karting 2008, and I was driving 2008 until 2010, and 2011 I was starting doing some racing in Europe, in UK.
You know, there's a Chinese driver, Yifei Yi, in Formula Renault. He's doing a pretty good job. Do you know him?
Yeah, I know him. He was my former teammate in karting when we was young.
Okay, good. Now, you said, you know, like you're the first Asian to be in the Ferrari Driver Academy. We see a lot of drivers from South Asia and other parts of the world, not traditionally involved in motorsports. What is your advice to them how to go about getting into single-seaters and do well in Europe?
I mean, first you have to take it step by step. You have to start with karts. That's where the base is. And once you learn the basic technique, you go to, for me, Formula 4 is the good for the rookie drivers, and you can learn how to drive a single seater. And after, of course, Formula 3 is definitely the step you cannot miss during your motorsports career. And it's a hard car, hard to be fast, but it's a good technique. And if you're good in Formula 3 championship, I'm sure when you're going up to Formula 2, Formula 1, you will be fun as well.
Now, before moving to Europe, did you consider the American racing scene? You know, we have a program called Master Road to Indy, which I think is a very good program for young, talented drivers. Did you look into that?
Well, I don't really follow this series, so can't comment.
Okay. And when you were growing up, who did you have a racing hero, Michael Schumacher or somebody?
I have to say it was Alonso. He was fighting with Schumacher, but it was Alonso by then, yeah.
Okay. Who do you think will win the world championship this year, Sebastian Vettel or Lewis Hamilton?
Finger crossed for the Sebastian Vettel.
Ferrari driver, huh? Okay, your favorite track in Europe?
Budapest, Hungary.
How come? What do you like about that? The food?
No, not the food in general. I mean, yeah, food is not bad. City is beautiful. The track, I mean, it's pretty challenging track, but for somehow I'm just always doing well there, and I really like the whole thing around Budapest. Every year I've been scoring podiums.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And a great season battle is going on in Formula One. And the MotoGP season came to an end in Valencia. Viva España. And with it, the great career of Valentino Rossi. In the race, we had, I think it was the first time, a Ducati 1-2-3 on the podium. Very impressive. Italian Francesco Pecco Bagnaia was the winner, and this was his fourth win of the season. Second was pole sitter Jorge Martin, who is a local hombre, with Australian Jack Miller third. And then, of course, we had this big Arrivederci Rossi thing. This was the last race in the incredible 26-year career of the doctor. At the end of the race, it was all lovey-dovey for Valli. There were video messages from football and tennis stars, plus, of course, LCH and Max, which was very nice. Rossi has been to MotoGP, what Senna and Schumacher are to Formula One. My biggest memory of Rossi would be a couple of things, but top of the pops is the Battle of Barcelona in 2009, when he won the race over his Yamaha teammate, Mr. Jorge Lorenzo. And it was a great battle, and they changed position two or three times on the final lap, and then Lorenzo took control, and it was all done. And going into the final corner, Rossi dived in and won the race, and nobody could believe it. Even, I remember the press conference, even Jorge Lorenzo was very, very impressive. So that's Doctor. And then he had a great battle, which was reminded me of Dijon Prenois. And this was at Laguna Seca, and I was at that race, man. what a battle that was. So great career, and of course, like everybody else, we want to wish him all the best. He has his own racing team, and he also has some sort of a racing academy, sort of a training ground or a motorcycle farm, whatever you want to call it. So, and a good thing is, you know, now that he has retired, I'm sure he'll be at a lot of races, hopefully. It's one of my big desires to do an interview with him and Giacomo Agostini. You remember Giacomo Agostini, right?
Yep, one of my buddies.
Yeah, one of the great legends of motorcycling from Italia. Okay, sir, Moto2, Remy Gardner, Bambino of Aussie great Wayne Gardner, is the Moto2 champion after finishing 10th on Sunday. He becomes the second father-son combination to achieve championship success on two wheels. The first was first combo was men from Modesto, California, Kenny Roberts, and his son Kenny Jr., who was also known as KRJR. So that's very impressive. Okay, now we move on to some IndyCar news. Kyle Kirkwood, he is one of the best young homegrown talent to come through the system in the last 10-15 years. He is from Jupiter, Florida, and has been in winning orbit for a few seasons now in different series. And next season, he will race full-time in IndyCars with AJ Foyt's team. He won the Indy Lights Championship with Andretti's team, Michael Andretti's team, I should say. And many people were expecting him to continue with them. But the deal was he will get a seat if Mikey buys Sauber and puts Colton Herta there. So that did not work out. But this is a good racing talent, homegrown talent, and I wish him all the best. Okay, sir, now we come to this segment called Faces Going Places. Because I'm always very excited when I see a kid coming from nowhere that I've never heard of, and next thing you know, he's picked up by McLaren or Red Bull or wins an important race in his first or second start. And these things do happen every now and then. When young, talented drivers are coming through the system, the ones with sponsorship from DDP, meaning Daddy's Deep Pockets, and this is what I really love, they run straight to big marketing and high-profile racing managers. I know of a few drivers who, to borrow a phrase from David Hobbs, could not do diddly squat in racing, but had the same manager as Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost. Think about it. I say best PR is performance on the track. So today we will look at three young men who are doing the business of winning on the tracks. This is the first time I've heard a few weeks ago, named Oliver Bierman from jolly old England. He is going spaghetti culture and has recently joined the Ferrari Driver Academy. This kid has impressed the hell out of me, and I am excited to follow his rise through the ranks now. And here is the reason for my Pontiac excitement, Mr. Rogers. And I watched quite a few of his races in the Formula 4 series, which thanks to YouTube you can do that. This season, at the age of 16, he took part in the German and Italian Formula 4 championships. Winning both of them, in the German F4 championship, he had 6 wins and 11 podiums from 11 races. In the Italian F4 championship, he recorded 11 wins, which included 7 in a row, and 15 podiums from 21 races. So that is very impressive performance. While Lewis is still winning, Lando and George threatening to win, and now Bierman flowing in the pipeline, Her Majesty's reign in F1 racing remains very strong for many years to come. Next season, Oliver Bierman will probably race in European F3, and we will keep an eye and report on his progress. And like everybody else, all the drivers, we wish him all the best. Next is a case of Andrea Kimi Antonelli. He's Italian, but he's going sauerkraut culture. You know, I've been hearing this name. He's only like 15 or 16, and I've been hearing his name for a few years now because he was picked up by Mercedes Driver Development Program and has done a tremendous job in the karting. And recently he took part in a few Italian Formula 4 races and was right up to speed very quickly. So hopefully it will be... Another thing I would like to see, sir, in my lifetime, or whatever is left of it, is a Formula One race in Argentina, land of Fangio and Reutemann. And I would love to see an Italian world champion. You know, there is, with all the craziness about motorsports in Italy, Ferrari, Monza, Maserati, this and that, no Italian championship winning driver since 1953, and that's very sad. So hopefully Kimi can change, the Italian Kimi can change that. Okay, sir, next we come to the case of Texan cowboy riding a Red Bull. Over the years, quite a few young American drivers have been inducted into the Red Bull Junior program, only to have their wings clipped by supercut style by F1's official barber of Graz, Dr. Helmut Marko. One young man who seems to be doing a good job is Jake Crawford from Texas. He is also known as Jetpack. This year he was third in the Euro Formula Open Series, which is basically Spanish Formula 3. He had 8 wins, and he also raced in Formula 3 and was 13th. Last year he was second in German F4, and I believe he's also like around 16 or something like that. So again, we want him to do all the best, and we'll see what is going to happen. Sir, do you think this Chinese driver, we will have a case of Swiss cheese meeting Szechuan dumpling in the next few days, and Guan Yuzhu will be announced as the F1 driver for Alfa Romeo?
Yes, I believe it. I mean, it's been talked about for quite a while. He's put in his, I'm not even sure what values they use in China, but it's going to work just fine. He'll be there. And, you know, he's an F1 weekly favorite, isn't he?
Well, we have interviewed him before, and he was a very nice, polite kid. And he's a competitive driver. I mean, this is not Chinese version of UJED. He has won races in Formula 2. But the thing, you know, is apparently the team is denying, but the report is that he's bringing up to $30 million. And he's part of the Renault or Alpine Driver Academy. He used to be in the Ferrari Driver Academy. He's a competitive racer. But see, this is where I have a cow with Formula 1. He is in his third year of Formula 2. And the kid who is leading, Oscar Piastri from Melbourne, Australia, he is a rookie. So if the rookie wins the championship, he should get a seat. I'm not saying he should get the seat at the expense of Guan Yuzhu, but Formula 1 should take care of their own, you know, which they have now made some comments that Formula 2 champion should get a seat in Formula 1. With all the money they make, they can throw a few million dollars to Haas or some other sad sack team and give somebody a chance. Because, you know, if they bring somebody, and I'm convinced it will happen one day, you bring in somebody who really didn't have the money, and next thing you know, he's out qualifying his teammate by half a second, which I think is the case right now with Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin. But talent should come to Formula 1, not renminbi or quetzals or dollars or petrodollars or rubles. You concur with me, senor?
I do, but it is part of the modern world. We are a money-esque looking kind of society, and I'm afraid to say that money will rule for many years to come.
Yeah, it's always been like this, unfortunately. Now it has become, since motor racing has become such a billion-dollar business, we see more and more of that. Okay, sir, moving on to racing. Petit Le Mans, the final race of the IMSA season, took place at Road Atlanta, which is a mighty fine track. I was there a few years ago. And championship was decided in the final corner of the final lap. And we have seen this movie before. And this time the champions were Felipe Nasr and Pipo Derani. And it was, you know, the race finishes at night time, so it was very impressive to see on TV. One of our friends, you know, from days gone by, Harry Tinknell from Exeter, UK, he won the race in the final outing for Mazda. And, sir, you know, I would like to give a shout-out to Mr. Philip Pegler. I don't know if he's in UK or US. He's been a traveling gentleman lately. But he was asking me if I would like to go with him to Daytona 500 in February. And I was not sure what's going to happen with my job situation, which still is up in the air, but something may happen. But I would like to tell Mr. Pegler, I am available for the Daytona 500, so please call me so we can make some arrangements for breakfast at Bob Evans or Cracker Barrel and enjoy the race for 4.5 hours or however long it takes. And don't forget your Confederate flag from California, okay? Okay, sir, some sad news now. I was not aware of this, and I'm very, very surprised. With all these websites I go to, I must have missed this thing. Ayrton Senna's dad, Milton De Silva, passed away late last month of natural causes, and he was 94 years old. And also, on November 2nd, 12th, which is a few days ago, American racer Bob Bondurant passed away in Paradise Valley, Arizona, at the age of 88. He was fourth. He took part in a few Formula One races. He was fourth in the 1966 Monaco Grand Prix driving a BRM. And in 1964 at Le Mans, he won his class driving a Shelby Cobra with Dan Gurney. So our condolences to the respective De Silva and Bondurant families. Anything else you want to say, sir, before we move on to famous last words?
Yes, I have met Bob Bondurant at Laguna Seca a number of times. His wife is very pleasant and 44 years younger than he was, but he was always very pleasant and approachable. So my condolences to, of course, the entire entourage. And now, Nasser, you may have the last word.
Well, it's not going to be me. It's going to be Max in getting a 50,000 euro fine from the steward. He said, and I quote, "I hope they have a nice dinner with a lot of expensive wine," end quote. And then later he said, "Maybe they can invite me also," which I don't think will be happening. And sir, that brings us to Musical Mondial as we invite Fausto Papetti and his saxophone to the Palatial Studios. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy some Brasilia Carnaval. Ciao.
Good night.